Okay, our final case this morning is number 22-1277, Behrens v. United States. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The CFC's opinion in this case that the easements to the railroad were broad enough in scope to allow rail banking and a hiking and biking trail is a major and significant error. In essence, the CFC followed Missouri's voluntary grant statute and authority from the Missouri Supreme Court to determine that the deeds were actually voluntary grants and were therefore easements, and then turned around and completely ignored the voluntary grant statute and the precedent from the Missouri Supreme Court when they got to the issue of the scope of the easements. There is simply no way to affirm the CFC's opinion in this case and still be obedient to that controlling authority, both the statute from Missouri, the Supreme Court of Missouri opinion in Brown v. Weir, the several opinions from this court with respect to the scope of the easements and what the landowners intended or did not intend to do 120 years ago, and basic property law. Here, the important thing is that under Missouri law, frankly, since 1853, Missouri has had a voluntary grant statute which specifically says that grants to a railroad for the construction of the railroad are limited in scope to railroad purposes as a matter of law. And it's also under case law. So it's both under the statute, section 388.2102 in Missouri, and also according to the precedent in Brown v. Weir and other cases.
If we agree with you on all this, we don't need to get to the abandonment stuff, right?
Correct, Your Honor. It's an alternative path to liability.
So what the government is arguing, at least one of their arguments, is that this was served railroad purposes because it was preserving it for possible future railroad use. And the only discussion of that point that we were able to find in the authorities was the concurring opinion in Pressall. And I don't think either one of you cites any other authority on that subject. Am I right about that? That's not a question which has been decided by a majority opinion.
I think it has, Your Honor, for this reason, and that is because what they are really saying is that a hiking and biking trail under the statute has to be an accommodation to the railroad. Because the statute says a construction, maintenance, or accommodation of the railroad. And so what they're really saying is that, first of all, it falls under that narrow interpretation of the statute that somehow a hiking and biking trail is somehow an accommodation to the railroad.
Yeah, but I'm sort of assuming that that gets rejected and that their remaining argument is, well, it's an accommodation of the railroad because it preserves it for possible future railroad use. And it doesn't seem, I can't find a decision which specifically addresses that other than the concurrence in Pressall.
I think, Your Honor, there are several opinions from this court, some authored by Your Honor, with respect to the fact that rail banking is not a railroad purpose. And it's the preservation, it's the speculative possibility of speculative restoration of the rail sometime in the future. That's not a railroad purpose, and there are several opinions all the way from Caldwell and Barclay and all of the other opinions that came from this court that said and confirmed exactly that. Here, what they're really trying to say is that it's not the preservation of the railroad, and the reason that is that before we even get to the administration of the Trails Act, it has to be a petition for abandonment by the railroad. In other words, they come in and they specifically say, we want to abandon this railroad corridor. And then they have to say that, and all the conditions have to be met before the STB will ever issue any kind of an order allowing them to abandon and allowing to start the whole rail banking process. Here, what we have is a situation where it's not an accommodation to the railroad at all, but for the preservation of the railroad tracks, it is an accommodation to the United States. Because that's what the Trails Act is all about. The Trails Act allows a trail operator to come in and use it in the interim for a hiking and biking trail, even though it's been abandoned by the railroad, and even though it's been approved for abandonment and all the conditions for abandonment have been met.
And I assume that part of the relevance of what you just said is that the Missouri statute that goes back to 1853 talks about accommodation of its railroad, the it being a particular company, which would not extend to the possibility of the corridor being used for rail purposes in the future by somebody else.
I think that's precisely it, Your Honor. In addition to the fact that if you look at the Brown v. Weir case carefully, it says construction, maintenance, and accommodation, and then in parentheses it has operations, which means that this railroad ceased using it for a railroad when they petitioned for the abandonment process. And that's exactly what happened here. So it's for that reason and the reason that, its railroad was stopped using it and some other railroad might come in and use it in the future. Rail banking is not a railroad purpose under a lot of authority from this court in particular.
If this is true under the 1853 Missouri statute, is there an additional federal law issue to discuss about rail banking or no?
Frankly, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think the CFC erred as a matter of law because they didn't give the credence to the Missouri statute. They didn't give credence. It's the public policy of Missouri. If you read Brown v. Weir carefully, it specifically says that. What the statute does is it states the public policy in Missouri that even though a deed might look like a fee deed, okay, even though it has a habendum clause or something that might be utilized for some purpose to determine that would ordinarily be a fee deed without the statute.
This is a restriction on what the parties can do even if they want to do it very much. Is if they do it by, a dollar consideration, we don't care what your intent is. This is a restriction. Can I ask this question? So there's discussion either in all or some of the deeds here about, let's call it a three-band corridor, the middle one with the rails and then two, 100-foot bands on the outside. The government's brief at least says that the outside bands are not in dispute here, only the middle.
That's true, Your Honor, because
I just want to understand.
They were used for ingress and egress to construct the inner band.
Right, but they're not in dispute because what?
Because they reverted back to the adjacent landowners 120 years ago.
They're already back.
They were in essence a temporary taking of that land for the purpose of construction of the easement in the first place.
Got it.
But all of those deeds, well, they're secondary and tertiary grants to the railroad, all specifically say.
Right, but only as the secondary and tertiary parts do they have specific language about use for rail. But
they specifically say that they're for the construction of the railroad.
Right, but the grant for the middle doesn't really have language like that, which is what creates the need to then figure out whether Missouri law overrides what on its face might look like a fee deed.
That's precisely right, Your Honor. It's also, I think it's pretty clear that these were for the construction of the railroad just as a matter of fact as well as a matter of law, even though they don't specifically say for the right-of-way. If you look at the history of what the railroad did, this is one of the crazy things about what the CFC did here, is they ultimately ordered us, so the judge ultimately ordered us to go back and look at extrinsic evidence. And then basically ignored all of that extrinsic evidence with respect to the creation, the location, and the prior use of those easements, which also generally showed that they were specifically used for railroad purposes only. Here, what happened is, and this is one reason why our briefs talk about this at some length, and there's no doubt that the voluntary grants conveyed an easement. An easement, by definition, as a matter of basic property law, has to be for a specific purpose. Okay? The CFC here never defined what that purpose was. They say, if not for railroad purposes. What the CFC did was, they said, we have an open-ended, unrestricted easement for any purpose. That's a judicial unicorn. That's contrary to what basic property law says, because an easement has to be for a specific purpose. And here, this court has spoken on a number of occasions, as have the Missouri courts, that it cannot be a general open-ended easement for any purpose. And so what you really have here is a situation where the CFC said, well, it looks like a fee deed, thereby negating the whole concept of Missouri's public policy with respect to the voluntary grant statute. But they said, I'm stuck with the fact that it's an easement, but it's an easement that is for unlimited purposes, which is also contrary to law. In other words, the CFC was wrong on both counts, on both avenues of that investigation. The CFC ended up doing here what no Missouri court has ever done, and that is allow an easement to a railroad to be used for non-railroad purposes. Never done before.
Unless this idea of rail banking would constitute railroad purposes, which is not actually the language, right, of 1853, right? Of the 1853 statute.
No, that, the statute says it'll be used for such purpose, which is the construction, the operation, the accommodation, which I think is the operation of the railroad, the maintenance of the railroad.
Of the company that's referred to in Section 1 of that statute, the corporation formed, not for future companies engaged in rail business.
That's
the term railroad is a squirrely word.
It's a squirrely word, but that's how it's used in this statute. And it goes back to what Judge Dyke mentioned at the very beginning. If you look at the history of the precedent from this court, all the way back to Preso 2, when they say it is unfathomable or beyond possibility that any grantor 120 years ago would have ever envisioned or intended, as this court tried to focus on, that they would use a grant to a railroad for a hiking and biking trip. That's in this court several times. In fact, in the Toews opinion, which was 8 years after Preso 2, they said it's beyond cavil that a grantor 120 years ago would have anticipated or intended that a grant to a railroad to use it for their railroad purposes would then be converted to a hiking and biking trip.
I think I'm probably repeating something I said, but why does intent matter in a case like this, where you would think that the deed itself is the best evidence of intent? A relevant part of the deed looks like a fee grant. And I thought your answer was, intent doesn't matter here. Missouri law says this is the extent of it regardless of intent. So whatever we said about what somebody in 1880 would have intended doesn't really seem to be the question here.
It's not. Okay. And the CFC should not have even gone down that path. The CFC went to great length to look at the wording of the deed, the habendum clause and the granting clause, to try to ascertain what the grantors intended with respect to the scope, even though that has been specifically preempted by Missouri law based on the voluntary grant statute.
So suppose we had a situation in which the railroad said, well, for the moment, we're going to discontinue operations on this line, but 10, 15 years from now, we hope to be able to start again with different economic conditions, and in the meantime, we're going to let people use it for hiking.
That's a case that I'm waiting to bring to this court, Your Honor. There is actually a separate body of law for discontinuance as opposed to abandonment. Here, we don't have that situation because it's abandoned.
Would that railroad be going to the Surface Transportation Board and seeking abandonment, or
they would be seeking discontinuance.
Which wouldn't...
And that would trigger a whole other set of regulations, and that if they then tried to use it for a hiking and biking trail, I'll be right back here then.
Okay.
I'm into my rebuttal time.
We'll give you 2 minutes. Mr. Mandelbaum. Or no, Mr. Smeltzer.
Yes, good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, John Smeltzer for the United States. Your Honors, the Court of Federal Claims correctly held that the federal rail banking in this case will not and could not cause a taking from the plaintiffs, and this is true for three reasons. There are three parts to our arguments. We've covered a lot of ground here, but let me just lay out the three parts. First part is the deeds themselves. They're unrestricted land grants to the railroads, and they're subject only to the terms of that voluntary grant statute. So the first point, to your point, Judge Toronto, the intent matters only if there's a restriction in the deed, right? And so these deeds are unrestricted, so it doesn't matter. What matters here is the language of the statute. The second part of our argument is under the statute, right, lands that are granted by voluntary grant can be put to any use that aids in the accommodation of the railroad.
Sticking point for me of right. The railroad meaning the company.
Right, and you're focusing on the term its, and we would submit, Your Honor, that it should not, that one word should not be so narrowly construed to preclude a conveyance, you know, to another railroad, right? If that railroad determined that it couldn't or didn't have the means to run a railroad, it certainly under United States and Missouri law can alienate its interest in its lands to another railroad or another entity.
And this corridor went through several...
This corridor was sold several times, right? The original railroad is four railroads behind, right? And so we would submit that the term its has to be read under the understanding, right, that railroad rights can be conveyed. And if they can be conveyed, then its doesn't mean that particular railroad. It means railroad purposes that the state of Missouri is trying to promote in general, right?
Okay, and this is not the slightest evidence in this record that any railroad was interested in resuming service over this line.
At this point, Your Honor, those railroads...
Or in the future either.
Right, but the purpose of the federal law, right, is to maintain the corridor for future railroad use. That is the reason for the Trails Act. That is the reason for promoting this interim use. That interim use preserves it within the federal rail system, right, for possible reactivation for potential rail use. So we submit that is within the broad language of the Missouri statute, aiding in the accommodation of railroads, because it leaves, and this was an important, if you look in the statute, the Trails Act, right, the background, it specifically states that Congress was concerned about the loss of these corridors, right, because today's economic circumstances were not sufficient to for certain railroads to believe that they could continue running, and so those railroads were willing to abandon their interests, right, because they didn't want to maintain or continue the obligation of maintaining the corridor, paying the taxes on it, and bearing liability for the use of the corridor. But Congress was concerned that, look, once these rail corridors are gone, we're not going to have them anymore.
Okay, so the easement here was transferred to this hiking trail organization, right?
It was transferred to the state of Missouri, Your Honor.
To the state of Missouri.
Let me step back. There's a trail interim use agreement between the railroad and the state of Missouri. The actual the law, the regulations don't require.
Who owns the easement now?
That's what I'm saying. It's not in the record. And the part of the federal law, the statute, and the regulations don't require an actual transfer or any particular form of transfer. Sometimes the railroads do fully transfer all their property rights. But there's nothing in the statute, the regulation, that says the railroad has to. I mean, that's the point, and it's not in this particular record as to the ownership of the right. What the statute is concerned with is the assumption of liability for the use and liability for maintaining and paying taxes in the interim period, right? And so as long as the interim use agreement provides for that.
Well, what does the statute say about future railroad use? How does the easement come back into being?
Easements have been reactivated, corridors that have been put into rail banking have been reactivated for rail use. And it happens when the railroad that agreed to the interim use agreement comes back and says, now I want to run a railroad or another railroad.
Do they keep the easement or did they transfer it?
If it's transferred, then the interim use agreement with the trail sponsor, right, as a matter of federal law, provides that it is subject to reactivation for rail use.
Which means retransferring the easement.
Which means that the trail sponsor, if somebody wants it for rail use, can't complain, right? The trail sponsor can't say, this is a trail now, we want it, it's a trail permanently, because it's not. The purpose of the federal law is to allow an interim use that's going to maintain this corridor for future rail use. That's the purpose of the statute. And so the third part of our argument, right, Your Honor, is the first part, D's unrestricted, so they don't control. The Missouri statute does control the scope. We don't need to look to extrinsic evidence or other things. We look to the plain language of aids in the accommodation.
So if you're right, how is it that you lost any of these cases?
Trying to get to my third point. We've lost a number of these cases because we have restricted deeds, right, Your Honor? There's a lot of cases where you don't have an unrestricted deed under a statute with broad language, under a state law that promotes, you know, the public use of railways, right? There, like the Taze case and the Purcell case were both cases where the restrictions were specifically within the deeds, right? And so if you have a grantor saying, I'm giving this to you, railroad company, only so long as it's used for a railroad, then you do look to the purpose of the grant. That's not what we have here, right? We have unrestricted, essentially, fee grants.
And do you happen to recall what the language in Purcell and the other ones that you just referred to really confined to essentially current use as for rail traffic, or was it broad enough to encompass your notion of preserving the corridor for possible future use?
The deeds in both cases specifically referred to language such as for the railroad purposes, or so long as.
Can you point me to where in Purcell this language appears? Because I thought the language in the deed in Purcell was broader than that. It had the word accommodation in it. That's my recollection. I may be wrong.
Right. The other thing.
Where's the language? Of the deed.
Your Honor, I don't have it highlighted in my copy of the case. I think you cited it in the brief. I mean, I do know that in the court, in analyzing, it talks about the bargain with the grantor, right? And made a determination under Vermont law that the bargain of the grantor wasn't being fulfilled if it's not being used for a railroad. So that, and again, this is just the plurality, right? In Purcell, there were four judges that talked about scope and looked at this issue. Six judges found, you know, a taking in Purcell by abandonment, because in that case there was a finding by the Court of Federal Claims that there was an abandonment under Vermont law before the Trails Act was enacted. Right? It's an interesting and I think outlying case in that sense, right, with respect to the abandonment, because that was an abandonment that was found under state law before you even get into Trails Act or even any consideration of interim use. So for sure, the analysis of the four judges in the plurality that addressed the scope issue was focused on the idea that there was a bargain in the terms of the grant. And I do know, Your Honor, and we cited in the brief, right, that when the court said that, the court said that a different result may pertain, right, if you have different kinds of easements or if you have a grant under a particular statute. Right, we cite that in the brief. That's language from Purcell, acknowledging that if you have a special statute that governs the scope of the deed, that's different than if you're dealing with just the grant. Here, as I said, all you have is the Missouri statute, right?
And so all it comes down to is statutory interpretation, and for you to prevail, you have to convince us that Missouri state law would read accommodation broadly enough to include rail banking.
Right, and as we cite in the brief, if you look at dictionaries at the time, the term accommodation.
Do you cite any cases? Because it seems
well, it was a case.
All the cases that discuss this seem to go the other way.
Not discuss the term accommodation, Your Honor. We cited a case that defined accommodation and then cited two definitions of accommodation, and the definition said, you know, accommodation is a favor or a convenience, and it's, you know, it's broadly construed.
Constraining accommodation in this statute?
No.
Right.
Constraining
all the
term.
All the cases. So, I mean, I don't know how that helps us. What helps us is state law cases construing this statute and getting a general understanding of what this statute means under Missouri state law, and all of them seem to have a more narrower reading of that statute, even if they didn't expressly talk about accommodation, than you're putting forth.
You're assuming cases that aren't there, Your Honor. The cases in Missouri
well,
that...
You're assuming cases that aren't there either.
Your Honor, let me...
You don't have a case
Brown
specifically constraining this statute.
Yes, Brown v.
Weir.
Brown v. Weir. Let's talk about Brown v. Weir, because that's the case that was identified by the plaintiffs as being significant. 152 Southwest 2nd, the court tells you what the purpose of the statute is. It says it was to protect the landowners, quote, if the railroad was never constructed, and also if the railroad company abandoned land acquired for its use. Okay? The key phrase there is abandoned land acquired for its use. They don't say stopped running the railroad, decided not to use it for active rail operations. They say abandoned land. We submit that's consistent with a broad interpretation of the statute. Going on in that decision, at pages 654 through 55, the Missouri Supreme Court specifically notes that the Missouri Constitution, since 1875, had declared railroads to be public highways, right? And then it says, if a highway is taken wholly off one man's property and such highway is later vacated, the use of the land goes back to the original owner grantees, unquote. So the idea of the statute is, the purpose of the statute is when the railroad is completely done with the use, right? When it's done with for any use that aids in the accommodation of railroads, it goes back to the grantors. The idea of the statute is to make sure that once we're done with the public use that's being allowed by this statute, that it's going to go back to somebody, because we don't want these strips and gores, you know, hanging out there where that nobody's maintaining.
Nothing to indicate that this railroad or any other railroad plan to go back to railroad use here.
Right, but that's the purpose of the federal law.
Railroad to public use in that last phrase, and that seems to be the problem here. I mean, this statute grants the easement for railroad purposes, not public use purposes.
Now, it doesn't say railroad purposes, Your Honor. It doesn't, and I want to be clear. I think broadly it's for railroad uses, because it says aid in the accommodation of railroads. But I also want to just point out to Your Honor, right, that the Missouri Constitution since 1875 has said that railroads are public highways. And so there is certainly a public use component, right, to a grant, a voluntary grant to a railroad. Any grantor, you know, to come back to this point, the grantor's intent might matter, but any grantor in 1901, right, when these grants were issued, that's providing a voluntary grant under a statute that's broadly worded under the Missouri Constitution that says these are public highways, is going to expect and have an expectation that there's going to be public use of this rail line that's consistent with rail use. And that's all we're saying, is it's preserved through the rail banking specifically for rail use, and the interim use, right, the interim use is consistent with what the public would expect the rail use to be used for. And let me give you an example. The plaintiffs and their amici, Professor Eli, said that walking on a railway is a trespass, and so that public use couldn't possibly have been contemplated, could be part of the scope of an easement. But we cited to the actual Missouri law that's longstanding since the early 1900s. That's Missouri Statute Section 389.650, Subsection 6. That says, quote, if any person not connected with or employed upon the railroad shall walk upon the track or tracks thereof, unquote, and then quote again, such person shall be deemed to have committed a trespass in so walking upon such track in any action brought by him on account of such harm against the corporation owning such railroad, but not otherwise. But not otherwise, Your Honors. The expectation from this statute is people publicly walking on the rail with the railroad's consent, where the railroad hasn't said you can't be on this line, and they're not suing the railroad for any harm. The expectation is the public rail line is going to be used for people walking on it. Right? That's all that's happening in the interim use. There's people walking on the rail line, this public highway under Missouri law, right? And it's being preserved specifically for, under federal law, and under the terms of rail banking, the specific terms of the interim use agreement for future rail use, which is a use that aids in the accommodation of the railroads. Nothing has been taken from the landowners who gave a voluntary grant, right, for the railroads to have and hold forever all rights, privileges, immunities, and appurtenances. as long as it's subject to the controlling statute, which again, not a question of intent, but this is not an unfairness concern for the grantors. They'll get the land back, right, for their use if and when the railroad abandons.
When we go to flying railroads.
Right.
When all railroads.
So we don't need to
go. Well, we're going to go to very fast railroads first, Your Honor, and we may need these lines, right?
Before you sit down, one question. I do not understand the Court of Federal Claims ruling on abandonment, the abandonment claim. As I understand it, there was an abandonment claim in the complaint, and the Court of Federal Claims said, no, you forfeited that claim because you didn't make a timely motion for summary judgment. They may have forfeited the right to make a motion for summary judgment, but how does that take the claim out of the case? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I think that question is the framing of the complaint is better asked from Mr. Stewart, because I don't remember. My understanding is the complaint said it was a taking, and these were two alternative theories that were argued in the summary judgment.
If I'm right that they were asserting an abandonment claim, the fact that they may have passed the time for summary judgment doesn't mean that you win. It just means they can't file a motion for summary judgment.
Your Honor, my understanding is the court treated it as two parts of their claim, said that they were to file summary judgment on this point. They didn't file summary judgment.
No, they didn't say you had to file summary judgment. They said if you were going to file, you had to do it by such and such date. Apparently, the court found they didn't comply with the date, right, and then treated that as though they lose. I don't understand that. You may lose the right to move for summary judgment. You don't lose the case.
It's a fair point. I mean, but they weren't arguing that there was disputed facts with respect to their claim. They were arguing that it was a point of law, and they didn't bring it. So, and they haven't briefed in their briefs that they need to go back and prove up facts. So I think that with respect to missing the court's deadline, the good cause standard and the abuse of discretion still applies. And we would also point out the fact that it's an alternative argument, right? And it makes no sense as an alternative argument, because if we prevail on the first part, and the rail line is broad enough to accommodate this use, the undisputed facts are is all you're doing is changing from one permitted use to another, and that can't possibly be evidence of abandonment.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll hear from Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Your Honor.
In a couple minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Frankly, I'm not sure I understand almost anything that the government said there. If you look at Brown v. Weir, first of all, it specifically says that it is apparent that the legislature intended positively to interfere in the dealings of a railroad company with the landowners and to protect the latter if the railroad was never constructed, and also if the railroad company abandoned land acquired for its use. That's exactly what happened here. They're basically, I thought they were going to resurrect arguments all the way back to Preso 2. They actually resurrected an argument all the way back to Preso 1. When they again are reiterating that rail banking under the Trails Act is purportedly a railroad purpose, okay? Here they're casting it in terms of accommodation to the railroad, when the Missouri Supreme Court specifically says that accommodation to the railroad means railroad operations, which have ceased. And it's an argument they've lost since 1990, and the government just raised it again. And the fact of the matter is that it goes back to what Justice Scalia asked in Preso 1, where he says, that argument isn't compelling to me, because if my aunt were a man, she would be my uncle.
Counsel, I mean, that might have been appropriate when Justice Scalia said it, but that kind of comment really isn't appropriate today.
I apologize, Your Honor. I thought I was quoting Justice Scalia as
agreeing with him. I think it's very insensitive to certain issues relevant to today, so please don't quote that.
Okay, I apologize, Your Honor. I think they are trying to rekindle arguments that they tried for years and years and lost. Because here what you have is a transfer of the land to the state of Missouri to operate it on an interim basis for a hiking and biking trail. And this court has said repeatedly that it is a creation of a new easement. The prior easement was extinguished. That's what the Trails Act does when it intervenes. That's the governmental act that allows them to build a hiking and biking trail that they otherwise would not be allowed to build. And I just want to, my time is up, Your Honor, but I want to direct the court's attention to the Abbott opinion that we actually filed as supplemental authority.
Okay, yeah, we're familiar with that. I think we're out of time. Thank both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this morning.